Hello, Outlander fans. This is episode 7 of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts, another Outlander podcast. I am your host, Jenny Coco Kier, and we are going to have a very special episode of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts tonight. Because, of course, as you know, Outlander is not airing tonight, so we won't be able to find out what happened with Jamie and Claire in the print shop until next week on October 22nd. So tonight we're just going to do something different. We're going to do a recap, actually, of Outlander Episode 1, the very first episode called Sassenach. Why? Because, well, it's an episode that I have not recapped. I haven't recapped anything from either of the previous seasons, of course, picking up with season 3 with my podcast. So since episode 1 is probably pretty much everyone's favorite, it's how we all began, how we all started. Maybe not favorite, but it certainly is our introduction to the entire series. So I just figured I'd go back and recap it. Why not? For those of you that have seen it countless times like myself, including today, I did rewatch it today. It'll just be a little trip down memory lane. For those of you who haven't seen it, if you don't want to know because you're planning on watching it, you might want to skip this episode. Or if you don't care, then go ahead and listen. It's actually going to be kind of cool. So let's get started. We start with Claire Beecham Randall. Claire Beecham Randall is a combat field nurse during World War II. Okay. She's separated from her husband, Frank Randall, after they'd only been married a year when she went to serve as a nurse during the war. And he went to serve for the Secret Intelligence Service. So they were separated for 5 years during the war and were reunited in 1945 at the end of the war. And when they were reunited, they decided to have a second honeymoon in Scottish Highlands in Inverness, hoping to reconnect and to get to know each other again. And while they were there, Frank, who's also a historian, decides to visit a friend of his, a Reverend Wakefield, who's also a history buff, to get more information about one of Frank's ancestors, Jonathan Randall, a redcoat captain from the 18th century. While Frank is visiting with the Reverend, Claire decides to visit with his housekeeper, Mrs. Graham, in the kitchen, and they decide to have tea. And after Claire finishes her tea, Mrs. Graham offers to read Claire's tea leaves. So she does this and notices some strange things and decides to read Claire's palm also. As she's reading Claire's palm, she notices that Claire will have another marriage. But instead of the marriage line being broken as per usual, the marriage line is forked. And Mrs. Graham looks a little bit confused by this, and Claire is a little disturbed by Mrs. Graham's reaction. So later in bed, Frank is telling Claire that he would like to set an alarm so that they can get up in time to see a ritual that will be performed by some of the local quote-unquote witches at this site called Craignadun, which is a circle of large standing stones on a hill outside of Inverness. He tells her that these local witches go there during solstice, which is Halloween, to perform this customary ritual, and it's very interesting, and he wants to see it. So later that night, they go up this hill, and they hide behind some bushes, and they watch as a group of robed women come out, and they're holding candles, and they start to do this ritualistic dance, and they're chanting, and it's very beautiful and ethereal, and Claire and Frank are mesmerized by it. And they even note at one point that one of the women in this ritualistic dance is Mrs. Graham. So they find that funny. So after, you know, this dance goes on and on throughout the night, apparently, as the sun starts to come up and eventually the women disperse. The sun is up now. It's morning. And Frank and Clara come out of their hiding place and decide to kind of explore the stones. Frank has his pad and paper. His pad and pen. He's taking notes about the things he's seeing. Clara is looking around at the plants because she's also like a botanist who's interested in the study of plants for medicinal purposes. And she observes these interesting plants that she thinks she recognizes. But just as she's getting a closer look, they hear a noise and they hide behind one of the stones. And one of the ladies who was part of the ritualistic dancing has come back and she's looking around for something. She finds what she's looking for, but she decides to stay and watch the sun finish rising. So when they see that she's not finna go nowhere, they decide, okay, we need to leave. So later that day, Frank tells Claire that he's got an appointment with the Reverend Wakefield to discuss some more information about his ancestor, Jonathan Randall. And Claire tells him that she will, while he's doing that, go back up to the hill to take a closer look at those plants she had seen earlier. So they kiss goodbye and promise to meet for dinner later. Claire goes back up to the hill. She is looking around and she finds the plants that she had seen and she starts to pick them. As she's picking the plants, she hears a strange noise and she looks around concerned and approaches the largest stone that this sound seems to be coming from. And as she reaches the stone and starts to reach her hand out to touch it, she suddenly feels this strange sensation, this falling sensation, this rushing sensation, and then she blacks out. When she comes to, she's on the ground before the largest stone, but when she looks around, she notices something is different. There's no paved road where her car was. Her car is gone. The paved road is gone. She's looking around and she's like, what is going on? She starts to walk around and observe things. And suddenly she starts to hear gunshots. She looks over and sees some red coat soldiers running through the woods with bayonets. And they're shooting at some old timey dressed Highland men, and the Highland men are shooting back at them. So there's like a gunfight or something. And she's like, okay, I must have stumbled across the movie set because this can't be really happening. So she's kind of trying to rationalize this. And then one of the redcoats kind of shoots towards her and the bullet hits the ground near her. And she's like, okay, they're using live rounds. This is not a good sign. She decides to start to run because at the very least, this is not a safe place to be. She runs until she comes across this other redcoat that is kneeling by this brook to get some water. And she sees the man's face and notices that he looks exactly like her husband, Frank. She asks him, thinking it is Frank, Frank, what are you doing? Then as the man stands and faces her, she realizes that this is not Frank. She says, you're not Frank. He says, no, madam, I am not. I am Captain Jonathan Randall of His Majesty's His Majesty's Dragoons at your service. So Claire, knowing that that's her husband Frank's ancestor's name, panics and then takes off running. The captain chases her and he catches her by this wall, the side of a mountain, this wall. And he puts his sword next to her and he says, who are you? She says, Claire Beecham. My husband, Frank Beecham, is a school teacher and he'll be back in 10 minutes. And Captain Randall doesn't believe any of this. And he says, you must think I'm crazy. You think I'm going to believe that story? And she's like, I don't care what you believe. She gets mad. She cusses at him and spits in his face. And he's like, okay, well, it seems to me like you're a whore. So he decides to try to pull up her dress and try to rape her. And this man jumps off the ledge above them onto Captain Randall, knocking him out, and grabs for Claire and says, Druid, you know, whatever the word is, I guess, which means come, you know. And she's like, what? He repeats it. He grabs her hand, pulls her along. They start to run away. She's asking them, where are we going? And they run into another couple of redcoats. The guy pulls her behind one of the stones, trying to hide, or a tree, I think. And they're trying to hide, but she's babbling about, you know, what he's doing, and she's making too much noise. So he knocks her upside the head and knocks her out. When she comes to, she's on the horse with him. They're riding. At first, she thinks she might be dreaming, but then she says the stench coming from this man on this horse with her makes her believe that, no, this is not a dream, because I could not even imagine this kind of smell. So as they approach this cabin, they go into the cabin, and there's all these other Highlander men dressed the same way as this man that has kidnapped her. And, you know, he says to them that he found her being attacked by Captain Randall. And there seemed to be some discussion as to whether or not she was a whore. And this one man in the cabin, who is apparently the leader, he says, well, what was the decision? Was she a whore? And the man says, no, it does not appear that she is. I would wager she's not. So, you know, the man is like, well, you know, well, one of the other guys says, well, we could put it to the test. And the leader, he says, I don't condone rape. And he says, and we don't have time to deal with this right now. Just make sure she doesn't go anywhere. And we need to deal with Jamie and make sure that he's okay to ride, because we got to get out of here. So they go over to this young man who's sitting by the fire, who's holding his arm. His arm is apparently been dislocated. We can tell because the bone is almost sticking up through his shoulder. It's really gross looking. So they decide that in order to help him, they've got to get his arm back in place. So, you know, the leader calls over a couple other guys to come over and try to assist with this task. And Claire notices them attempting this, but they're doing it wrong. And she jumps in before they break the guy's arm. And she says, hey, you're going to break his arm. So she says to the leader, she says, his arm has got to be put at a certain level before the bone will go back into joint. So the leader looks at her thinking, well, she sounds like she knows what she's doing. So he lets her approach the young man. She does. And she assists in lifting the young man's arm, and she gets it to the right level. And then the bone smoothly slips back into joint. The young man relieved and thanks her and says that it does not hurt anymore. And she says it will. She gets a belt from someone, ties it off, and tells him to keep it, you know, keep it still and put cold compress or warm compresses to it, like he has all that in the woods. But anyway, they decide to gather their things and get ready to go, since Jamie's okay to ride. And Dougal, who's the leader, decides to have Claire ride with Jamie. So they ride out. Claire notices also as they're leaving that she can't see the city anymore. When she was with Frank earlier, looking out in the same direction, from her time, she noticed that the city was off in the distance, lit up, you know, with all the city lights. But now, as she looked out at the city, she even asked Jamie, she says, where's the city? I can't see it. He's like, it's right in front of you. It's right out there. The difference, of course, is that they are now in a time where there are no city lights, so you can't see that. So she notices, that's her first real clue that this is another time. But still, in her mind, she's like, this is not even possible. It can't be. So anyway, they get on the horses and they start to ride. They ride for hours until the next day. And you know, and as they're riding the next day, Claire notices as they're passing these mountains that it looks familiar. She says to Jamie, I've been here before. And she said, you see that mountain up there that looks like a cocktail? I heard that this is a place where the English set up ambushes. This is something that Frank had told her during their trip to Scotland, that this mountain that they had visited during the trip was a place where the English used to set up ambushes. So Claire is relaying this information to Jamie. Jamie looks around and is like, well, this is a good place for an ambush if they're going to do that. So he rides up to Dougal and gives him this information. And Claire says, well, Dougal says to Claire, how would you know something like that? And Claire says, oh, I heard it in the village. And Dougal looks at her like, yeah, okay. But he doesn't take any chances. He decides to take this seriously. And he gives a signal for the men to prepare for an ambush. And Jamie pushes Claire off the horse and says for her to hide. So they run up a little ways down the road on the horses. And sure enough, the English redcoats jump out, ambushing them. But they were prepared. So they were ready to, with pistols drawn, ready to fight. Claire takes this opportunity to run. So she runs off in the opposite direction, thinking she's going somewhere. I don't know where she thinks she's going. And of course, as she's, you know, running, just a little while later, Jamie catches up to her and cuts her off on his horse and asks her if she's lost. She's like, well, I hope you haven't been misusing that shoulder. And he's like, yeah, don't worry about that. Just you've got to come with me. And she's like, you're hurt, because he's got a lot of blood on him. But he says, most of this isn't even mine. So she says, you can't take me with you. He says, oh, yes, yes, I can. And she's like, what are you going to do, cut my throat if I don't go? He's like, no, but you don't look that heavy. I'll throw you over my shoulder and take you by force if you want. Do you want that? She said, no. And he says, okay, well, then I guess you're going with me. So he puts her back on the horse. They go on and catch up with the others. And some of them are like thanking her for telling them about the ambush, because they got to catch the redcoats off guard and have a little bit of fun with that fight. But Dougal is looking at her really suspiciously. He's very suspicious of her at this point. And, you know, they offer her a little bit of something to drink. Jamie does anyway. Because, you know, they haven't eaten. And he tells her, look, just have a little drink. It'll make you forget that you're hungry. So she takes a drink and they start to ride again. They ride off and they're riding into the night. And at one point during the night ride, Jamie starts to kind of waver back and forth in the saddle. Claire notices this and then he starts to fall over, and she goes, oh, he's going over. So he falls off the horse and everyone has to stop. Claire jumps down to assist him. They pull him off to the side of the road. She rips open his shirt and reveals that he has been shot. So that blood that he was saying wasn't his actually was his. So she's like, the idiot could have told me he was shot. So she asks them for, you know, weird things like iodine and methylate. They're like, what was that? And she's like, well, do you have any alcohol? So they're like, oh yeah, yeah, we've got that. So they gave her a bottle of liquor and she pours it over his wound. He wakes up with a start, you know, and she is like asking people for bandages to wrap his wound. No one has any of that. So she rips the piece of her dress off to wrap it. And while she's doing it, because she's frustrated, I guess, or angry that, you know, she doesn't have everything she needs, she's cussing, you know, and she's saying, goddamn son of a gun, you know, whatever. And the guys are scandalized because they're not accustomed to hearing women swear. So one of the guys says, your husband should tan your hide for using such language. And another guy starts to recite something about St. Paul and something about women. And she says, you can mind your own goddamn business and soak in St. Paul. So they look at each other like, okay, this broad is a little different. So she's looking at Jamie now and she says, and if you move, I'll bash you over the head. And he's like, threats, isn't it? And after I shared my drink with you, you know, so I'm getting too detailed. I'm going to have to make these summaries a little bit more summarized. Anyway, but I want to establish the first episode more. I'll be more quick with the other episodes. Anyway, after she gets him pretty much strapped up with a bandage, Dougal says, we'll sit just long enough for you to finish dressing his wound. Then we got to be out. And Claire's like, but he needs rest. She said, he can't ride like this. and Jamie calls after her, Randall. And that halts her in her tracks. She turns around and looks at him because that's her last name, her married name. And he says, the red coat captain that you saw in the woods, he commands these troops out here and he's not going to give up until he finds us. So we can't stay here long. So she goes over to him and she finishes, you know, wrapping him up. And she says, so, you know, Black Jack Randall. He's like, he says, I wouldn't want anyone to be taken prisoner by that man. And if you can't dress me good enough to ride, then just leave me here with a pistol and let me determine my own fate. So she's obviously determined from this that Black Jack Randall is not a good guy. But anyway, she finishes wrapping his wound and helps him to his feet and says, on your horse, soldier. So he's like, okay, I guess I'm good. So he walks off. She's staring after him. She has this look on her face like, I don't know. She's looking at Jamie. So maybe there's some sort of connection there. I don't know. But as she's looking at Jamie, two of the other men are looking at them, also observing this interaction. And I think maybe they're thinking also there's some sort of connection here that they might find fascinating. So at any rate, they start to ride again. This time they make it all the way to Castle Leok. And Claire notices that Castle Leok is also another place where her and Frank had visited during their trip to Scotland during their honeymoon. And it was a ruin, of course, at that time. And he was taking her through, showing her all throughout it. And now they're there in a time where the castle was actively alive with people. And this is where they were taking her. And she's observing this and going, well, this is the beginning of some sort of adventure. And that's pretty much the end of episode one. All right. So my thoughts on the episode. Well, I can say that now, just like before, I absolutely love this episode. I thought it was a brilliant interpretation of the book. There was some differences from what happened in the book. I'm not going to make any book comparisons, though. I'm sticking straight with just a show recap. Not going to do any book comparisons for these older episodes. I remember when I first watched episode one thinking that Jamie, the man who, Sam, who plays Jamie, I remember thinking that this could not have been a better pick. This guy, he so embodies the person that is Jamie. I have seen so many TV shows adapted or books adapted into movies and TV shows. And very often there have been times like, okay, I'm going to give y'all an example. I know a lot of you probably hate this book and hated this movie because I think almost everybody does. But I'm one of the people who didn't hate the book and didn't hate the movie. 50 Shades of Grey. Yes, yes. Go ahead and turn me off. I know. Oh, I suck. Yes, I know. But let me just say what I was going to say, which is that I can't imagine anyone being less the person that Christian Grey was than Jamie Dornan. I just can't imagine them picking anyone that was less Christian Grey than Jamie Dornan. If you read the book, 50 Shades, which I have, his look is just completely not what Jamie Dornan is. It's just, I think the only thing that Jamie Dornan has in common with the Christian Grey of the book is his eye color, gray. That's about it. You know, the Christian Grey in the book is tall, Jamie Dornan is not tall. The Christian Grey in the book is actually redheaded, has copper hair, like Jamie from Outlander. Christian Grey in the movie has brown hair. The Christian Grey in the book is tall. Jamie Dornan, probably a good 6 feet, if that. The Christian Grey in the book, I think, was a good 6'3", kind of tall. Actually, the Christian Grey in the book could probably have been played really well by Sam Heughan. Because the Christian Grey in the book that they describe is this young-looking, copper-haired, messy-haired guy who was tall. He's 27 years old. And, you know, he's absolutely gorgeous, dreamy-looking. And while Jamie Dornan is an attractive man, and now that I've seen the movie and the second movie as well, he's kind of embodied the character, in a manner of speaking. But it took me a minute. It wasn't instantaneous like it was with Jamie, with Sam Heughan and Jamie. From the first episode, from the first time I saw him sitting at that fire, at the fireplace, holding his arm, his dislocated arm. And then when Claire starts to work on him, my thought, that is so Jamie. I never had a question. Same with Claire. Even though my first instincts about Katrina was that she was a little too old to play Claire, maybe a little too tall and willowy, because in the book, they like to refer to Claire's nice ass. And it seems to me that someone with a plump ass or a nice ass would be kind of on the thick side. Not thick like curvy, like bigger than, but someone with some curves. And Katrina is just willowy. She's willowy. She's a waif. You know, because she's a model. So, of course, she's willowy and a waif. So I didn't expect that. And I also didn't expect someone who was about 5'9". I think I expected someone who was more like 5'6", 5'7". But, you know, she grew on me very quickly. And from the first episode, actually, from this episode, Katrina became Claire. It was just simple as that. Tobias, hands down Frank. Hands down Frank. Even though in the book, I think I probably imagined Frank looking sort of like a, I don't know, kind of like a slimy, thin, kind of weirdo dude. You know, I didn't think of him as attractive in any way. I kind of imagined him with a pencil mustache for some reason. I don't know why. Did they describe him as having a mustache in the book? I don't even remember. But I just remember imagining that, and like black hair with a part, and maybe it's kind of slicked a little bit with oil, and and you know, we've all seen this character. You know, I just imagined him being this sort of aristocratic looking, black haired, thin man with a pencil thin mustache and a haughty air about him. So to see Tobias play Frank and to kind of look at him at first and go, is that Frank? But then to watch for a few minutes and go, yeah, that's Frank. And he just quickly embodied the role, and now he's forever Frank Randall and Black Jack Randall. So, but let's see, what else? I loved the whole, I'm trying to think. I loved the whole interaction between Jamie and Claire once they first met, and the, I think, almost immediate sexual tension. Or I think it's not unclear when you first see them together that there's a bit of a spark. even though she's just trying to reset his arm, I think the minute that he looks at her, it's pretty clear that he sees her and he's possibly struck by her beauty. And I think when she sees him, it's pretty clear, even though they're doing a really good job of pretending that they're not noticing any of this, but with the eyes, I think it's pretty clear that we are noticing that there is an attraction, not just from him to her, but also from her to him. And that little scene that I mentioned where he had fallen off the horse and she had to bandage him up and then she sent him back on his way and she was looking after him as he walked. I think the attraction at that moment was pretty intense, pretty strong. And there were several moments, like when he recaptured her after she tried to run and he threatened to throw her over his shoulder. That was a pretty intense moment. Lots of intense moments that made us all feel like, yeah, they like each other. They're not going to admit it yet, but yeah, there's an attraction there. So, yeah. And Dougal, wonderful. Just wonderful. I miss Graham. Man, he was a great asset to this show. And it's just, I just wish there was some way, I don't know. Great actor. Loved him. Was great seeing Angus again. Oh, so good seeing Angus again. It was just great. And seeing Murtaugh and everyone, it was just great. It was great. It was good old times, good old times. But anyway, guys, that's it for my recap. Great show, great episode. Of course, everyone loves the first episode, and you really couldn't have gone wrong. It was a great introduction to a really wonderful series, and I don't think they could have done a better job with it. All right, so that's it for this week's episode of Bad Exponents and Kilts, guys. We'll catch you next week with our episode 6 of season 3, a Malcolm recap. Can't wait, can't wait. See you guys then. Take care.